The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator... Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is Monday, May 24th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us here for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. And joining me here in studio, the maestro, Ganja John.
That's actually not Al Pacino. That's me clearing my throat before the show.
Got to get ready for the show here. Yep. And, of course, our newsreader and my good friend and half-half sister joining us from Astoria, Oregon, Cannabis Carrie.
Hello, guys. Happy Monday.
Cannabis Carrie is got a new setup in her virtual studio. Carrie, you've got a new mic stand and all sorts of equipment, right?
Actually, the only thing that I've been able to unpack and get set up is the mic stand. But I have some other stuff, and I'm going to get it all hooked up, I swear.
Okay. Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. All right.
The mic stand was the easiest.
Yeah. Well, I hope everyone had a good weekend. I had myself a completely analog weekend. I disconnected from the cell phone, disconnected from the computer. So we'll be getting caught up on some of the stories that happened over this weekend. Carrie brings us our hemp headlines right after the first break. So what's in the news, Carrie?
Well, we're definitely going to go down and take a look at that violence that's happening in Jamaica, unfortunately. We're also going to look at a letter that the Congress, some congressmen sent to the Treasury Department on Friday. And I actually like reporting on these stories much better than our stupid stoner stories. I have a stupid cop story for us.
Oh, a stupid cop story. Someday I'm going to have to make up a special introduction just for that. We'll use Reefer Madness today, I think, for that one. Thanks, Carrie.
Perfect.
We'll be right back, and we'll get those news items from you here right after our first break. Also want to encourage everyone out there that's listening to me, if you want to get involved and jump on the bandwagon for ending adult marijuana prohibition, seems like everybody's talking about it, talking about legalization, you can get involved. You can join Normal. Just give me an email at stash@normal.org. Coming up for our daily Toker Tunes, it's Roots Monday. We got some Johnny Reefer Seed music. We're going to do an Anna Song video takedown and Dan Beats from Columbia, Missouri, all right after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hello, I'm Radical Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal and host of Normal Show Live. Medical marijuana is legal in 14 states today, and I encourage you to visit MarijuanaDoctors.com to find a physician to help you obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in your state. In most medical marijuana states, patients qualify with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis, and other conditions which vary by state. Learn which conditions are covered in your state at MarijuanaDoctors.com. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, MarijuanaDoctors.com will help you find a physician online or by phone to obtain a permit for medical marijuana. MarijuanaDoctors.com is fully transparent and HIPAA compliant. Call 866-996-9333 today or visit MarijuanaDoctors.com. That's 866-996-9333 by phone or online at MarijuanaDoctors.com.
Medical medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
In Kingston, Jamaica, the home of many reggae legends, violence has erupted after gang members supportive of an alleged drug lord attacked police stations and blockaded a large part of the city. Authorities have had to call a state of emergency. Two police stations were evacuated after being hit with Molotov cocktails. Miles of city of the Jamaican capital were blocked off by the gang using vehicles, sandbags, barbed wire, and gating materials. The standoff is due to the United States' attempts to extradite the suspected drug kingpin, Christopher Koch, who was charged last year with conspiracy to distribute marijuana, cocaine, and conspiracy to traffic firearms in a U.S. federal court. On Friday, Jamaican Prime Minister Bruce Golding said citizens should allow the courts to deal with the extradition matter. But by Sunday afternoon, he had to declare the state of emergency in response to the blockades and violence in the city, according to the Jamaican Information Service. Christopher Koch was charged in August by the attorney's office in New York, which accused him of leading an international crime, alleging that at Koch's direction, members of his criminal organization sell marijuana and crack cocaine in the New York area and send the proceeds back to Jamaica. Koch has been a higher-level target, according to the DEA. He is on the Justice Department's list of priority organization targets, which the department lists as the world's most dangerous narcotics kingpins. In response to the violence, the State Department has issued a travel alert due to civil unrest that is disrupting services in Kingston that may include the Norman Manley International Airport.
Well, this is a sad story here in that we don't want to see people, you know, Jamaica's been through enough in its history and doesn't need this kind of unrest taking place. But again, we've got to point to the fact that it's drug prohibition and specifically marijuana prohibition that makes this kind of unrest possible. You know, when we look at these third world countries where they don't have a lot of economic opportunities, their farming has been taken over by, you know, large conglomerates here that weed out the family farmer and so on, that oftentimes the only thing they can turn to is production of marijuana or opium or cocaine, depending on which country we're talking about. But in all of these situations, you know, people are going to look at this story and say, oh, well, he was wanted for more than marijuana. He's wanted for cocaine and other stuff. But marijuana is the bulk of what this war on drugs is about. There are 22.5 million adult annual marijuana consumers in this country. There are only 2 million adult annual cocaine consumers in this country. So if you're running a business that your products are marijuana and cocaine, well, marijuana is going to be a large part of your business. So if we could go forth and come up with serious legalization here in this country and allow people to buy, sell, and grow their own, we take away from these criminals a large share of their market. Now, it's not going to completely eliminate them. No, there'll still be guys that'll take the cocaine market or the meth market or the heroin market, whatever. But if we can take away half of their possible sales, we do so much in taking away a lot of their power. So again, anytime you see these kind of stories come up, it's not that we're saying that these drug lords are good guys by any means. You know, they often use violence and extortion and so on in their activities. We're not saying they're good guys. We're saying these guys can only exist because of prohibition.
Dispensary owners have been reporting for years now that banks have been unwilling to do business with them. In Colorado last summer, there were virtually no banks in the state who would let a new dispensary open up a business account. The reason behind the unstated boycott of marijuana businesses is the fear of being charged with money laundering due to some prosecutions of medical marijuana cases having that charge tacked on simply for depositing money from a marijuana business into an account. With 14 states making medical marijuana legal, a few states looking to legalize marijuana altogether, and almost everyone looking to tax sales, it becomes difficult to run a business when you're not allowed to seek the banking services most businesses enjoy. Colorado Congressman Jared Polis has been working alongside Americans for Safer Access to bring the issue to the attention of the Treasury Department. Their efforts extended on Friday to a letter written to Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner, urging him to issue written guidance for financial institutions which would commit the department to not target any account holders who are in compliance with state medical marijuana laws. The letter was signed by Polis and 14 other members of Congress. According to Americans for Safe Access, excuse me, according to Americans for Safe Access Government Affairs Director Karen Woodson, while financial institutions may have valid concerns, the risk to banks is minimal, whereas their refusal to work with state-compliant medical marijuana providers jeopardizes countless people and delegitimizes lawful businesses. The letter said that there is an increased risk to public safety with potential theft or robbery that cash-only businesses must face. Large banks such as Bank of America, Chase, Wells Fargo, and U.S. Bank have all refused to work with medical marijuana suppliers and have refused to provide credit card transaction services. Chase Bank refused on the basis of, quote, financial, operational, and compliance risk, but then was unable to define what that actually meant.
Hmm. Well, we've felt this as well here at Normal and some of our allies, California Normal and Celeb Stoner, who were rejected by the online banking service PayPal merely because they were listing advertisements for clinics that would give recommendations for medical marijuana. So not even buying or selling marijuana in any way, merely taking the advertising money to help people get legal medical marijuana. PayPal boycotted California Normal and Celeb Stoner and other groups. And we've taken PayPal off our site at stash.normal.org as well. So this is something we're all feeling in this. And again, the banks are saying that it's because they're worried about the money laundering charges. But what they've got to understand is by not giving financial services to these dispensaries, you force them to become cash-only businesses. And they're always claiming that, you know, you always see these busts on the news where they pile up these massive piles of cash, you know, on these busts to say, look at all this cash that these medical marijuana dispensaries have. Yeah, because you won't let them put it in a bank. Come on. It's a public health risk to have that much cash laying around any sort of business establishment. That's why we encourage them to do banking, so they won't have stick-up robberies going on and so on. And again, this idea, and again, kudos to Representative Polis here on this. You would think that with Attorney General Holder making the statement that they wouldn't use federal resources to go after dispensaries that are in compliance with state law, shouldn't that extend to the financial sector? Shouldn't that extend to the financial sector to say, we won't be targeting banks that do business with these dispensaries that are in compliance with state law? Of course, that would be expecting my politicians to act with some consistency, so I may be asking a lot.
Is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Carrie, before you go on with this story, I'm going to explain. We're going to use the reefer madness from this because it's not somebody saying something. Usually I use reefer madness if someone's saying something crazy about marijuana, like marijuana is 100 times more potent than the 60s, or it'll cause your toes to turn green, or whatever stupid thing they say. But this time we're using reefer madness to show how crazy the law enforcement can become in the pursuit of eradicating a plant. So, Carrie, take it away.
Yeah, this is the hash oil of reefer madness here.
Yes, it is.
We've said over and over again, our U.S. police know what marijuana looks like, so they should be able to tell the difference between marijuana and industrial hemp. I may have to rethink that argument. The police in Corpus Christi got a call from a teenager who was riding his bike through Waldron Park and told him that he just found marijuana plants growing there. The Corpus Christi police went right over and very quickly hauled away 300 to 400 medium-sized plants,
wow,
stopping only because it became too dark for them to finish. They marked off the area, finishing up a long couple of hours, tagging the hundreds of plants and hauling them down to the police department. Back at the station, routine testing showed that it wasn't marijuana after all. In fact, all of the plants dug up were a common weed in the area called horse mint. True to its name, horse mint smells very strongly of peppermint. It has long lilac or white-colored flowers with thin green to grayish-green oblong elliptical leaves. Or in other words, it doesn't really look like marijuana at all.
Not at all. You know, I think the police are gonna reply to this, and you know, that being from Corpus Christi, Texas.
Shut up! Shut enough!
Yeah, that sounds about like what was taking place there. But you know, I've always made the joke, you know, that if they wanted to make a weed illegal, they should make the crabgrass on my lawn illegal. Now I think maybe we're on to something here. We could get the police to show up and do a whole bunch of yard work. I'd also point out that the cops couldn't get it completely weeded before nightfall. You know, you send out any good pot smoking landscaping crew, they'll have that thing cleaned out, you know, in 3 hours. But the well trained police force, they can't handle that.
National Organization for the Reform of Horse Mint Laws.
We'll have to make a T-shirt up for that, won't we? Thank you so much for that story, Carrie. I don't know what else to say about it other than we've got that. We're going to get it posted up at the Stash blog here pretty soon at stash.normal.org. We'll talk some more about it. I did want to bring up a story that's up on the Normal front page at normal.org. This just broke on Saturday, and this was news from Michigan, in Saginaw, Michigan. Let's see if I can bring this up here. And it has to do with the cops doing a raid. Now, of course, Michigan's a medical marijuana state. And what happened is, according to the Saginaw News, the cops burst into this man's, or were serving a warrant at this man's home. And while they were there, they seized, of course, his plants and all. But then they destroyed all of his grow equipment. Just completely destroyed it. There's a picture up on the Normal front page here. Let's see if I can bring that up for you. The picture just basically shows, you can see it there kind of on the web window, this grow lights and ballast and some of the tubing that they would use, just completely smashed by these cops in this raid. And the people there in Michigan are pointing out that, you know, medical marijuana is legal. You know, if you have a question as to whether or not someone's got a legal grow going on, they still are innocent until proven guilty, and therefore you shouldn't be destroying their equipment. The police had responded that, well, in all of their policy and all of the prior marijuana busts that they do, it was standard procedure to take a little bit of the grow equipment into evidence and then just take pictures of the rest and destroy it so it couldn't be used. And by not taking all the equipment, they're not, you know, taking up so much room in the police lockers and everything. But because of the outrage over this, they've made a change in policy. The police there in Saginaw, Michigan have officially, the county sheriff there has officially made a new policy that they will take the grow lights and all the equipment into evidence and preserve it and not destroy it anymore. And a lot of this has to do with our Michigan Normal chapters, leading the cry out against this and contacting these Saginaw people. So good work by the people there in the Michigan Normal chapters. The police raided this guy's home, and because they say he violated drug laws, they destroyed his grow ops that cost him about $7,000. So this guy is out $7,000 worth of grow equipment. Good news there, at least that they've changed the policy. But now what the policy is going to be is that they will take the equipment based on a civil forfeiture. Now, if you don't know what civil asset forfeiture is, this is a feature of our law that presumes that a piece of equipment, a piece of property, is guilty of a crime. I know, it's really weird. What they say, this is kind of, I mean, the concept of it is like, say you're a drug kingpin and you've got a Maserati, and you bought that Maserati off the money you made dealing crack. So the way the civil asset forfeiture goes, it says, well, that's ill-gotten gains. You got that Maserati through your crime, and therefore that Maserati is guilty of the crime of being purchased by drug money. It's kind of the way the concept works. But this has been so twisted out of shape by our law enforcement personnel and our prosecutors in this country as to be unrecognizable. It's originally a statute that was to go after drug kingpins, but more and more it gets used on average folks to be able to seize their property based on, you know, the suspicion of them being guilty of a drug crime. And then the person has to prove the property not guilty. Remember, it's guilty until proven innocent with these civil asset forfeitures. And even if you're found innocent of the original crime, the property still has to be found innocent of the crime. That is, if they say you bought your Jeep because you were dealing weed, and then you're found not guilty of dealing weed, you still have to prove the Jeep wasn't bought with weed money. It's a crazy thing. Look it up on the internet. Just go to Google, type in civil asset forfeiture. Everybody out there listening to this should know what that law is and how our police departments abuse it. And it becomes policing for profit. We have a story of one man, I forget the name right off the top of my head, but it's a California man with a $2.6 million property that the federal government had been trying to get for years and years and years. And finally, they used civil asset forfeiture to get it from him. Tragic story. Again, civil asset forfeiture. Look it up on Google.
Where do you think all those Derek cars come from, kids?
Absolutely right. Hey, time to think of happier stuff. Let's take a break and enjoy the finer things in nature. We'll be right back.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would say to South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
You really want to legalize marijuana? Prove it. Join Normal today at NORML.org, and your donation will help us spread the growing truth about cannabis. Free speech ain't free, you know.
Free the ganja tree, it's the healing of the nation. Free the cali weed, good for meditation. Free the pot smokers, the arena delight. Lighting up the chalice, they will keep no malice.
The healing of marijuana.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by PlanetFantastic.com and Bella Blue Tie-Dye Fashions. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. Welcome back, everyone. 23 after the hour, and check out CannabisFantastic.com. And I swear, I re-recorded that. I think I just haven't loaded it into the player yet, Carrie. I'm so sorry.
Hey, that's okay. No problem.
Well, Carrie wears two hats here at Normal Show Live. She does our news reading, and she also takes care of our Roots Monday because she's got this fantastic folk show on KMUN up there in Astoria, Oregon. You can check it out at coastradio.org. So Carrie knows all about the jazz, the blues, the folk. What do we got today?
Well, today I'm so excited. I get to spin a Johnny Reefer Seed tune today.
Oh, yeah.
Most of you know Johnny Reefer Seed is our Irie Wednesday music editor, and he's released a couple of new songs that I'm just thrilled to play at least one of them here. This song that we're going to play today was submitted to the 2010 Marijuana Music Awards, and Johnny Reefer Seed and the High Rollers have won that award 3 times in the past. Johnny Reefer Seed and the High Rollers have been dishing out unruly live rock and roll shows since 2006 and call their style of music red-eyed soul. I think that fits pretty well. They play music that can sometimes be described as southern fried country, folk, guitar rock, and in the case of today's musical number, Nuggets Are a Girl's Best Friend, a little old-timey folk sound in there. All of the music is sprinkled with a healthy dose of humor and speaks about cannabis and cannabis culture that only can be told from an insider. He's recorded an award-winning song with Afro Man and last year won the American Music Marijuana Music Awards with the Song of the Year, Brother Can You Spare a Dime, a song about going without our favorite plant. Look for him on iTunes and CD Baby, and of course, he checks in with us on Wednesdays, upping our cool quotient about 5 degrees.
All right. Johnny Reefer Seed and the High Rollers. We love their music. This is it. Nuggets are a girl's best friend. Yeah, Nuggets are a girl's best friend, I can tell you from personal experience.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
Time for our normal cannabis community calendar, which you can find at norml.org/calendar. Tonight, Monday, May 24th, Madison Normal in Madison, Wisconsin is having their meeting at the Wilmar Center Youth Room in the basement, 7 p.m. Wilmar Center in Madison, Wisconsin. Check out madisonnormal.org for more details. On Tuesday, May 25th, there's a weekly Medicaid event taking place at the Phoenix Cafe in Hazel Park, Michigan. Music, meditation, and art with a $7 cover charge. Kalamazoo area in Michigan having their Compassion Club meeting at Charlie's Place in Kalamazoo, Michigan. You can check out KalamazooAreaCompassionClub.org. Also on Tuesday in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Hemp TV is on the air. Call 505-880-0666 for more information. And then coming up this weekend, Saturday, May 29th, begins our the Memorial Day weekend, of course. Saturday, May 29th, Kansas City Normal will be having their public meeting at the Westport Coffee House. Antrim and Kalkaska County Normal in Michigan will be having their meetings at the Helena Township Library. On Sunday, May 30th, the 2010 Riverside Music Jam featuring Sinna the Poet, the Ben Miller Band, and Jailhouse will be taking place in Joplin, Missouri. Check out Joplin Normal there as well, and you can check out their website at joplin-normal.org. And then on Sunday, May 30th as well, Normal Louisiana is having their online chat meeting. Check out normallouisiana.org for details. And I'm also getting word from the chat room that today is the last day in California to register to vote for the November election. So Californians, if you are listening to me, get out and register to vote. The latest polls on the Tax Control and Regulate Cannabis Act of 2010 are showing 49% for and 48% against. This is going to be a nail biter. So we need everybody who's registered to vote to get out and vote, and everyone who's not registered to vote to get out and register. If you're already registered, look for your friends, go talk to the people you know and find out if they're registered. If they're not, get them registered to vote. All right. For all of that information on the calendar, you can check out the Normal Cannabis Community Calendar at norml.org/calendar.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Hello, everyone. This is something I covered on our Friday show, but is actually on the after show, and I wanted to make sure that this got documented properly. We're recording this as well for YouTube, so that's the other reason I had to do this. But time for my radical rant, and this has to do with a story that appeared on my local news here in Portland, Oregon, K2, the Channel 2 news out here, an investigation from Anna Song, who went undercover to report on how easy it is to get a medical marijuana card in the city of Portland and the state of Oregon under its medical marijuana program. I've got some video here that we'll show as well, and what I'm going to do is play a little, and then we'll stop and talk about it, and we'll play some more. So this is the Anna Song K2 video.
My quest to get a card begins with a visit to a local medical marijuana clinic. As I approach...
All right. Yeah, that apparently is going to be a little too stuttery here for us to get any good video off of that. But want to talk a little bit about this in the video. What you're seeing right here, I'll just play the video and we'll let it play beneath me talking here. Anna Song here, you can see, is kind of in disguise. She's got a hat on and she's approaching this gentleman outside who's the receptionist for this medical marijuana clinic, who's on a smoke break. Got a little cigarette dangling out there, and she's handing over. He asks to see her medical records and she hands them over. So I have a problem with that right off the bat, in that it's not a medical marijuana program, it's a medical privacy problem. There is a law called HIPAA, which is all about privacy that medical records should be afforded, and this little action right here is kind of a violation of that. So that was my problem in that part of the video. He takes a look at the records, and she intones that, yes, your records are good, and you should come on in here. This other part of the video, and we'll catch this as the screen goes across, is this particular clinic is located on Sandy Boulevard here in Portland, Oregon, and you can't quite see the phone number over there on the side, but the phone number is 503-something-something-something-WEED. Right. So they use the word weed in the phone number, which is kind of disturbing.
It was an easy pick.
Yeah, it was kind of an easy pick. So here they are. And she is trying to, filling out her paperwork for the medical marijuana card. And she's in this part of the video, she's talking about how she's going in and she's told that she's supposed to get an appointment at 5:04 the next day, 5 o'clock p.m. And that when she came back from her appointment or came back for her appointment, that the doctor was late, that she was there for a 5 o'clock appointment. Doctor didn't show up till 6 because the doctor was out to lunch. And what they're trying to do is to kind of imply that the doctor was gone from noon to 6, right? Well, doctors work all kinds of shifts. So if the doctor went out at 5 and her appointment was 5:04, the doctor came back at 6. That seems pretty reasonable, 1 hour lunch that a doctor would have here. And also being able to get an appointment so quickly, that's something that didn't get pointed out in this video is, you go to get an appointment for any kind of specialist in this country, and it takes, weeks or months before you actually get the appointment. This appointment was like 2-3 days later.
Yeah, my dad's a doctor. I've worked reception in this field before, and an appointment the next day is pretty rare.
Yeah, so if anything, this is a story about how good our system is working and being able to get people their appointments quickly. Now, in this portion of the video, Anna Song talks about her own condition and how she wasn't lying about any of the conditions she had when she went in. She has these medical records here, you see, that detail that she's been in three car accidents, and she's had two different appointments within the within 90 days of each other to demonstrate that she has chronic pain from her three car accidents that she's been in, that she wasn't at fault in any of them. But yeah. I'm just saying, if Anna Song offers you a ride, maybe, you know, take the bus.
Yeah, maybe.
But she's been in three car accidents that weren't her fault, and she suffers scoliosis. So she goes on here to point out, you know, how her neck and her back still hurt her, you know, because she suffered these three car accidents and she has scoliosis. And so this kind of leads me to think, what's the undercover part of this? I mean, what's the big undercover part of this if she qualifies?
You qualify. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. You qualify for medical marijuana.
You've got a medical marijuana card.
Oh,
yeah.
How are you undercover then? Well, what she's trying to say is undercover here is that she has the scoliosis and the three car wrecks and has neck and back pain, but she successfully treated the neck and back pain with massage therapy. So the idea here is that, oh, because something else worked for you, because massage therapy worked, you shouldn't be able to get medical marijuana. It's something I call the medicine of last resort, right? You got to try everything else, and if none of those work and you're really, really hurting, then we can let you smoke weed. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And I don't know about you guys, but I can't really afford massage therapy.
Well, yeah, massage therapy, great if you can get it. Great if you got insurance that'll even pay for it.
Yeah.
Apparently Anna Song's got that. As she goes on, here's where they're trying to make the frame here. And I wanted to frame this severe pain number one. Look at the artwork on that logo here, this severe pain. Let me back this up just a tad here. Just trying to make it as scary as possible. They use this scary font, you know, this Halloween font, severe pain, like, you know, Frankenstein or something coming up here. You'll see it come up here just a second. Severe pain! Oh, frightening, frightening. And it's the number one reason that people have, it's the number one condition that's listed on cards for people that become patients here in Oregon. Now, this is where they're trying to set this frame of abuse. And this is something our business opponents and our opponents in law enforcement have been trying to shut down the medical marijuana program for years. And one of the ways they want to try to do it is to convince Oregonians that it's been abused. Oh, there's abuse of the system. And one of the things they'll point back to is in 1998, when the measure was on the ballot, Measure 67, there was a financial impact statement that said that the program would cost $147,000 each year on the estimate that there'd be 500 patients a year, right? And so that's how they're always pointing back to say, you guys said there'd only be 500 patients and now there's 33,000. Well, okay, yeah, but the 500 wasn't us saying that. That was the government making a financial impact statement. And 500 a year after 12 years would at least be 6,000 patients, so it's not that much more than what was expected. And to formulate that there would only be 500 every year, that number wouldn't grow as more people became accustomed to the program and more people realized the truth behind cannabis that could be effective pain reliever, of course the number is going to grow. I pointed this out when I made my rant the other day, that in the state of Oregon, we have 2.9 million adults. And according to pain management specialists, 35.5% of all American adults suffer from chronic pain. That would be 1 million Oregonians, if you do the math, 1 million Oregonians who suffer from severe pain. And what do we offer for these Oregonians? We offer them, you know, ibuprofen, you know, your Tylenols, your NSAIDs, your aspirins. And when we start to get to prescriptions, we start talking about OxyContin, Vicodin, Demerol, Darvocet, these kind of things. Every single one of them is toxic. Every single one of the drugs you can take for pain that I just listed can kill you. And the FDA has recently come out with new recommendations that there be stronger warnings on over-the-counter and prescription medicines with acetaminophen and other pain-relieving drugs, to say that because of a rash of unintended and intentional overdoses, that people are suffering severe hepatotoxicity. Hepatotoxicity just means liver damage, right? So every possible drug you could take for pain will cause liver damage, except one. And that's cannabis. You cannot overdose from it. It is not toxic and it will not kill your liver. So is it any surprise that people in pain, once they find out they can use cannabis, choose to do so? Makes perfect sense to me. Now, let me go back to this video here, because here's where they're trying to bend this frame to make people think it's abuse. Severe pain, the number one condition. And what comes up next in the graphic is the number. 33,000 total patients. And out of 33,000, 29,500 with severe pain. So what they're trying to do there is to try to fool people that aren't paying too close attention. They'll think, my God, 33,000, 29,500 with severe pain. That's like what? 80%? 85%? It's like everybody that's getting a medical marijuana card is getting it for pain. This sounds like terrible abuse. Well, as the video goes on, it mentions how the next two conditions for medical marijuana are a, quote, distant second and third, muscle spasms with 7,800 and nausea with 4,800. Now, stop for just a second. 29,500 plus 7,800 plus 4,800, isn't that a whole lot more than 33,000? And as it goes on, you'll see they list the rest of the condition: cancer, seizures, cachexia, HIV, AIDS, glaucoma at 1,200, almost 900, 600, 500, 500. Gosh, doesn't all of that add up to a whole lot more than 33,000? Well, it does. The numbers of all of these other conditions aside from severe pain add up to about half of all of the 33,000 cards. So at least half of the people who have cards, some of them may be putting down severe pain as another condition that they have, right? If you've got multiple sclerosis and you've got severe muscle spasms, there's some pain involved with that. If you got cancer and taking chemotherapy, there's some pain involved with that. HIV AIDS, there's some pain involved there. So this distortion of the facts, them putting up the 33,000 first and then the 29,500, big bold letters, and mentioning those numbers on the voiceover, mind you, and then quickly dispatching with all the other numbers before anyone notices that really about half the people who have cards have them only for severe pain. Now, as the video continues here, Anna Song continues to talk about how she really does have these conditions. She wasn't lying when she went in. However, when she went in to see the doctor here, when she went into this clinic and she gave over her medical records, what I want to know is whether her medical records indicate that the massage therapy relieved her pain. See, if she went in there and showed medical records that show that she'd been in three car accidents and has scoliosis, that's a slam dunk for getting a medical marijuana card, whether or not the massage therapy helped. Here they put the logo, back pain and massage therapy. But again, if in order to get the card, she would have to tell the doctor she's suffering pain now. She'd have to lie about whether or not that massage therapy helped her. At this point in the, she shows how the doctor had written patient may qualify from medical marijuana, but then crossed out qualify and put in benefit, as if that was some sort of scandal. Yes, you may benefit from medical marijuana because you have documented pain, and medical marijuana works for documented pain. So, as the video continues, she points out the benefit part here, and she speaks with Paul Stanford at the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, which is a completely different clinic, and she does point that out, that it's a different clinic, and she asks him in the voiceover, he gets asked, you know, and he mentions that his clinics are going to clear $5 million this year. And again, I feel like they put that in there to say, look at all this money being made by getting people to abuse the system, right? By getting people to claim they have back pain or whatever. Ooh, big bad Paul Stanford, he's making $5 million. Well, first of all, understand that that $5 million is from 15 clinics across 10 states, right? So it's not that big a number when you talk about it. And that's talking about the gross that's going to be made, $5 million gross. When you talk about starting to take out the mortgages and the payroll and the advertising and the doctors and so on, it's not that much money. And even if it was, why are we criticizing someone who runs a specialty medical clinic for referrals that are completely legal? Nothing wrong with making money by helping people get relief that they need. And the final part I wanted to get to here had to do with the doctor that they show from this clinic, Dr. Sandra Camacho Otero. And they try to make the point here in the video of how she has written the most medical marijuana recommendations of anyone, over 8,000 recommendations. But again, that's not surprising when so many doctors won't recommend medical marijuana in this state. There are over 16,000 doctors in this state, but only 3,000 that are recommending medical marijuana. Many of them can't recommend because they work for a federal hospital or a hospital that's getting federal money somewhere, or they work for a private practice who has decided to set a policy that they're not allowed to do it, or they'll get fired. There's also HMOs that get involved and say, no, you can't recommend medical marijuana. So to have a specialist like Dr. Camacho Otero who's going to sign for people, that's not surprising when you have this whole supply and demand. There's a big demand for it, and she's one of the few people supplying these recommendations. It would be like an abortion provider in Wichita, Kansas, doing the majority of abortions in Wichita, Kansas. There's probably not a lot of abortion doctors in Wichita, Kansas. Anyway, we could go forever on this, and I'll post a better video of this on YouTube. I'm sorry that we couldn't play the video and the audio with it. We'll be right back with Dan Vietz from Columbia, Missouri. He's with Missouri Normal. We'll be talking about that Columbia dog shooting. Thanks for sticking with us, and again, we'll check out that video. I'll have that posted on the Stash blog at stash.normal.org just as soon as I can get it downloaded and working correctly. Thanks, everybody. Be right back.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com. The effects of marijuana prohibition are felt by all Americans in every walk of life, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, party politics, social status, wealth, gender, sexual orientation, or even one's use or non-use of marijuana. As the marijuana smokers lobby, Normal hears the stories of these average Americans and brings them to the attention of our policymakers and our fellow citizens in this segment we call Normal Newsmakers.
Welcome back, everyone. 47 after the hour. We're about to go out to Columbia, Missouri to speak with Dan Vietz. He's the head of Missouri Normal out there, as well as a member of the National Normal Board of Directors. We're going to be talking about this video and the resulting uproar in Columbia, Missouri. This was the video where the dogs were shot in a SWAT raid. Let me play just a little bit of that video. And remember, this does have graphic language and violence. So if you don't like that stuff, you might just want to turn the show off at this point. So here we go with the Columbia video.
Columbia police search warrant! Columbia police search warrant!
All right. That, of course, is the video that we all were in uproar about that happened in Columbia, Missouri, I think about a month ago. But we're bringing Dan Vietz from Missouri Normal on the line. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Russ. Happy to be here.
We wanted to talk about the fallout from this. And the most recent news we've received over the weekend was that the internal investigation in Columbia, Missouri into this this shooting and this raid turned up no wrongdoing by the police officers. Can you comment on that or give us more information?
Well, that was the conclusion. Of course, it was reached by the police department itself, investigating itself. You know, one of the speakers recently at a public hearing on this said, you know, if I was allowed to investigate myself, I would never be convicted.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So, you know, no one expected anything different, I think, from the internal investigation. And, you know, even more so here where the chief, I think, feels compelled to support his officers to some degree. And so there will be a further investigation. We have a fairly newly established Citizens Review Board here in town, and they've been asked by the mayor to do an independent investigation. So that will happen.
Now, the Columbia police, you know, investigating themselves and finding no wrongdoing, the quote from the police officer or the chief in charge there was about, according to what they knew at the time, the law and the policy, they didn't do anything wrong. And I think that just attests to the fact that the policy itself is wrong.
That's right. And, you know, to his credit, I think the chief has even acknowledged that. I think that's what he meant by that, is he went to great pains to say that we are going to change the policy, and he's actually announced two or three different policy changes already to try to respond to the outrage about this. And you know, as far as they go, they're positive, but we're not satisfied. We're not convinced that's all that needs to be done. Mm.
And for the folks who were victimized by this, of course, Jonathan Whitworth was eventually convicted of just a paraphernalia charge. I think he paid a $300 fine. What legal recourse does he have? Right. Where is he going with this?
Well, he has the option to file a formal complaint with the Citizens Review Board here in town. He also has the option to pursue a federal civil rights claim. I suppose he could file a standard tort claim in the state courts here, but I think realistically that he is more likely to be considering filing a federal civil rights claim. I've spoken with his lawyer several times. His lawyer's a good man, a good friend of mine, and he hopes they do choose to pursue something further. But you know, what's happened here is that this family has been so traumatized by the experience of this raid that they're, I think to some degree, they feel intimidated, and they don't want to be the center of attention. And they know, of course, that if they do pursue a civil rights claim in particular, that they're going to have to go to court and appear in public and answer questions. And they're not anxious to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's a double-edged sword. It's a difficult decision for them, I think, to make.
Yeah, I can understand that. We're speaking with Dan Vietz from Missouri. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that there are many of us in the community who, regardless of whether the Whitworth family pursues it further, it will be pursued. As I say, the city's Citizen Review Board has already been requested by the mayor to conduct their own investigation, which they will do. But there are a number of groups that have sprung up that are working with NORML, working with the ACLU, to try to bring about some permanent changes. I'll tell you, the ACLU board, in addition to working with NORML, I chair the Mid-Missouri ACLU board. We met on Saturday, and we discussed this matter at length. We came up with a resolution, which we have not actually even publicized as yet. The position that we've adopted is that the Columbia Police Department should refrain from even requesting search warrants in the investigation of the nonviolent offenses. And the reason for that is really very simple, that the execution of a search warrant is by its very nature inherently a violent activity. When you break people's doors down and come into their homes with guns drawn, pointed at their heads, that's what most people would consider violence. And so we asked the police department, if you're investigating a nonviolent crime, how could you possibly justify inflicting violence, creating violence, in the name of fighting a nonviolent offense? The chief initially seemed to recognize the logic of that, but he hasn't quite bought into that policy yet. Mm.
You know, I was looking in our chat room, and people are discussing this as they listen, and our own Cannabis Carrie had a really good question here. Carrie, if you're on the line still, would you ask that question?
Oh, about the dog being shot? Is
yes.
that what you're talking about, Radical
yes.
Russ?
Yes.
Well, originally they said they shot the dog once, and then it continued to be aggressive, so they had to shoot it again. But clearly, when you hear the audio, you can hear the first shot, and then you hear a dog whimpering and crying. There's no growling. There's no even barking. How do they cover their butts on that one?
Well, you're right. They claim that let's see. In fact, I have the investigation here, so let's see, the media release claims that they encountered two dogs, both of which acted aggressively as officers attempted to make entry. One shot was fired at the dogs, and one retreated immediately. The other did not. Subsequently, additional shots were fired at the second dog in the kitchen, fatally wounding it. But that does not seem to be entirely consistent with what we see and hear in the videotape. You know, initially the copy of the video that was made available to the Whitworth's attorney was censored by the police. It did not contain the audio, and of course the video is not nearly as dramatic if you don't hear that dog whimpering in the background.
And I just wanted to say one more thing. I mean, they keep saying, is barking a sign of aggression? Because what dog isn't going to bark when a stranger enters a family's residence?
Exactly right. That's exactly right. I mean, dogs have been companions of human beings since literally prehistoric times because they do serve as guardians. That's exactly what dogs do. You know, it's amazing how cavalier the police department is about shooting people's dogs. Yet, if one of their dogs is ever threatened, they react very strongly and immediately, and obviously they think that if any of their dogs are threatened, that's a major issue. They don't seem to have much regard for anyone else's dogs, however. And, you know, this is not an isolated incident. One of the questions which the press has not really forced the department to respond to is, how many dogs have you shot in the past couple of years? I have another client who had two of his dogs shot to death during the execution of a search warrant just last year. And by the admission of the police, these dogs were shot in the back. In other words, they were retreating at the time they were shot. It's just outrageous.
Yeah, it's a horrific double standard. And I've been trying to get in touch with people from the ASPCA or PETA to try to make a bigger stand on this, to make this more public, that this is a common thing.
Yes, it's all too common.
I did want to round out our segment here, Dan. We're coming up at the top of the hour here, but I did want to round this out with what was posted on the normal.org webpage with your discussion with Chief Burton and his quotes here about breaking into a warehouse and so on. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of comments made by the chief last Thursday at a press conference I attended, and some of us who weren't members of the press were still allowed the opportunity to ask questions. I pointed out to the chief that admittedly, before he came to Columbia 5 years ago, the voters overwhelmingly endorsed a measure which, among many other things, said that the enforcement of laws against marijuana should be the lowest enforcement priority for the Columbia Police Department and other law enforcement here. And I asked him, I knew he was aware of it, so I didn't say, are you aware of it? I said, does this policy have any impact whatsoever in your policies? How do you implement this? How do you reflect this? And he says, well, frankly, I don't know how we can do that. And I didn't have a chance to follow up. Yeah, I can suggest, and I will suggest to him many ways they can do it, such as not requesting search warrants for pot cases. But we went on, and he said later on that he acknowledged that there were many people, and he was sure there were many police officers, who believed that marijuana should be legal. And then, now I'm not quoting verbatim, but very close, I think, he said, I know you're working to change these laws, and I wish you luck, and I hope you succeed. I mean, words very close to that. So that was striking. Now, the local press hasn't picked up on that. But I believe that, indeed, he was, in effect, endorsing legalization. So I think that's a reasonable inference, at least.
Yeah, I think so, too. And the quotes are up on the normal.org website. Just go to normal.org. They're right there. It's the second story posted right now. And Dan Vietz is the coordinator of Missouri Normal and also on the Normal Board of Directors, as well as many other things you're doing there in Missouri. We thank you for all your hard work. As we round out here, anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
No, I think that they should stay tuned, however, because there are some other incidents which I think are going to come to light very shortly. So we'll be bringing more information to them.
All right. We'll have you back on, and we'll talk all about that the next time it's made available. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Russ. Thank you, Terry. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Went a little bit long here on the show, but hey, we need to get these words out. And I'm just thinking, you know, Columbia, Missouri passed this lowest law enforcement priority initiative. They didn't say misdemeanor or felony. They just said the enforcement of marijuana laws shall be the lowest priority in Columbia, Missouri. It seems to me when you're sending your most violent, most aggressive, most expensive police squad out to enforce marijuana laws, that's the opposite of the lowest priority. At the very least, they could stop and endangering people's lives by bursting into their homes, drawing their guns, shooting their pets. Who knows? There could have been a ricochet that might have killed that little boy that was living in there, little 7-year-old. It's a shame. We'll keep you updated on the Columbia, Missouri story and all the stories here at Normal Show Live. We're here every weekday, Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Pacific, and replays at 3, 5, 7, and 9. For everyone here at the Normal Foundation, I'm Radical Russ. For Cannabis Carrie and Ganja John, we'll see you next time. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you